Hello, this is Lois Pausch reading the Vermillion County News for Friday, May the 26th, 2017. And I'll start with an article with the headline, DACC event to showcase cars, trucks. Dateline Danville. Car enthusiasts will get an eyeful this weekend when Danville Area Community College's Technology Division, Central Illinois Mustang Club, and Omnicolor of Danville will all sponsor the 11th annual open house and car truck show. The show will be Saturday in the Technology Center parking lot at DACC in front of the Julius W. Hegeler II Advanced Technology Center. Registration is from 9 to 11 a.m. for a $10 fee. The show, which is open to all makes, models, and years of cars and trucks, will take place rain or shine. Trophies will be presented at 3 p.m. Dash plaques will be given to the first 75 entries. Additional award categories include top 25 cars, top 15 trucks, top 5 youth ages 16 to 21, DACC Students' Choice, Veterans' Choice, top GM, top Ford, top Mopar, top truck, best paint, best import. The annual show always draws a crowd of young and old car and truck enthusiasts, depending on the weather. Doug Curley, show chairman for the Mustang Club, said 125 to 130 car and truck entries were showcased at last year's event. "I'm a little worried about the weather," he said. "The forecast keeps changing. For the most part, we've been really lucky with the weather in the past," he added. Judges for the awards are show participants and a panel of Mustang Club members. "Every year the show has a theme, and this year's theme is Hot Wheels," Curley said. As in past years, Mark Dale of Danville will create more than 50 trophies by hand. Dale has created the trophies for the car and trunk show for the last 9 out of 11 years. This year's trophies will look a lot like the Hot Wheels logo, like on the packaging, Curley said. Omnicolor of Danville, a new sponsor at this year's show, also plans to add some new features. "They have changed one thing this year," said Lisa Osborne, administrative assistant in the Business and Technology Division. "Danville Omnicolor has changed hands, and they are bringing a PPG automotive paint, that is, truck to the show. Omnicolor is going to bring some cars and the PPG truck," Curley said. PPG will set up tents and set out their products. We're more than happy to have him on board," Curley said of Omnicolor's new owner, Joey White. Another new feature of the show, thanks to Omnicolor's participation, will be a drawing for a $200 gift certificate to Omnicolor of Danville. Curley said the money raised from the sale of the raffle tickets will go toward establishing a scholarship for an automotive student at DACC. The annual car show used to be at the Vocational Occupational Technical Education Center, VOTEC, until 11 years ago when it was brought to DACC. The show always has taken place on the Saturday of Memorial Day weekend, with car and truck entries coming from as far away as Kankakee, Champaign, Indianapolis, and Terre Haute, Curley said. Concessions will be available during the show from the same vendor as the past six or more years. He will be selling the four basic food groups, hamburgers, hot dogs, chips, and drinks, Curley said. His prices are great. He makes it affordable for everyone. And the next article has the headline, DMT driver retires after 37 years. Dateline Danville. Danville Mass Transit employee Mike Randall can tell you a lot of interesting stories from his 37 years since he started driving city buses. He's probably driven around 2 million to 3 million miles. Today is his last day on the job. Randall is retiring. He is one of three city employees, including firefighters Tom Pruitt and Tad Beddo, who took the health insurance retirement incentive offered by the city. There were 22 city employees eligible. The 65-year-old Randall said one of his most memorable bus passengers was in the 1980s. It was a woman who was going to have a baby. He went off route to take her to the hospital, and a nurse was waiting on them with a wheelchair. The woman ended up naming her son Michael after him. Randall said there have been a lot of changes with the buses and the bus garage. There Initially, it was no air conditioning or power steering with the buses. The buses also were all 40 feet long, he said. DMT also had room to park only one bus in the garage. He said it took about 4 hours to warm up at the start of the day. Now all buses fit inside the bus garage. The driver's seat in the buses also became more comfortable over the years with air ride seats and lumbar support in them, Randall said. Randall said he also would have to change the route signs on the buses by hand, but now the signs are computerized. So are the fare boxes. The fare price was 35 cents when he first started. Today, full fare is $1 with reduced fare being 50 cents for senior citizens, disabled persons, and students. Randall, who was child number 5 of 10 children in his family growing up, was forced to find a new job when he started working at DMT. Randall's brother Lloyd is the baby of the family. Lloyd is a city alderman. Mike Randall was a semi-tractor trailer driver and the company filed for bankruptcy. He learned this on the road coming back from Omaha, Nebraska. He parked the semi for the last time and climbed aboard a bus. He asked the woman if they were hiring and she said yes. Randall filled out an application, had an interview, and was hired that same day. He's had every bus route and also would drive a bus for different events, such as the Balloon Classic. Randall, in 2012, received a Safe Driving Award for driving 30 years without a preventable accident. In addition to driving city buses, Randall has worked in the DMT officer as a dispatcher. The new downtown bus transfer zone is expected to open next month, and Randall said he has permission to possibly drive a bus into the new site. Randall said he's not sure what he'll do in retirement. His wife Brenda still works at Quaker Oats. Randall's hobbies include working in his yard and fishing. He normally would wake up at 4:45 a.m. or 5 a.m. to start work at 6:10 a.m. It's been very good to me, he said about his job. I contribute all these years to the Lord. I'm going to miss it, he said. DMT Operations Supervisor Robert McNeil said they're going to miss Randall, too. He's a good guy, McNeil said. DMT bus driver Brenda Finley says she's going to miss her lunch buddy. Finley and Randall said they've laughed, cried, and prayed together over the years. They've comforted each other during health issues and losing loved ones. I'm going to miss Mike, Finley said. With Randall retiring, Finley will become the senior driver. She's been with DMT for 15 years. And it appears that there's only one obituary today, so I'll do it right now. Myron L. Cumler passed away at Carl Hospital in Urbana after a long battle with multiple myeloma blood cancer on Tuesday, May 23rd. In lieu of flowers, memorials can be made in Myron's name to Second Church of Christ. A celebration of Myron's life will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, May 27th, that's tomorrow, at the Second Church of Christ, 3350 East 4East Street, Danville, Illinois, 61834. A visitation will be held 2 hours prior, starting at 9 a.m. An interment will be held at a later date at Sunset Memorial Park. Dale Daniil will be officiating. And now another news article with the headline, Prunkard to Lead Southwest. Dateline Danville. Southwest Elementary School staff and students will welcome a new principal in August. Lindsay Prunkard, assistant principal at Southview Upper Elementary School, was appointed by the Danville District 118 School Board Wednesday night as principal of Southwest for the 2017-28 school years, starting July 1st. I'm extremely excited and humbled and ready to take on a new challenge, Prunkard said Thursday. She said she was aware there were several other candidates vying for the post, adding, it was a pleasure to be selected. Prunkard joined District 118 in 2008 as a fifth grade teacher at Meade Park Elementary School and has served as a summer school teacher, volleyball coach, scholastic bowl coach, and yearbook advisor. Prior to serving as assistant principal at Southview during the 2016-2017 school year, Prunkard was a data and instructional facilitator at Meade Park. I grew up teaching in District 118, and I am ready to move into administration, she said. Prunkard said she already knows some of the staff at Southwest, but is looking forward to meeting the other staff, students, and community members. Although she attended the Jamaica School District as As a youngster, Prunkert said, District 118 has always been my home. They've treated me well. Also on Wednesday, school board members heard from Ed Butler, one of the three kings of peace and president of the NAACP of Danville, who said he and the other kings of peace, Bobo Smalls, the Reverend Frank McCullough, R.J. Davis, and Mark Young, have been in the trenches 5.5 to 6 hours a day at various schools in the district since the beginning of the school year. He said the kings have concerns about the dress code, among other things they have seen. It's embarrassing to see some of the girls dressed like they're going to a nightclub and boys with the cracks showing, Butler said. On Thursday, Board President Bill Dobbles disagreed with Butler's assessment. I think our kids look pretty nice, he said. Butler said the group also is against allowing students to wear hoodies due to safety concerns, although a recommended change to the dress code would allow DHS students to wear maroon or gray hoodies. The kings also want to see cell phone use in the schools further restricted. We see students in the hallways talking on cell phones or texting when the teacher gave them a pass to go to the restroom, Butler said. Dobbles added, we have security cameras all over Danville High. We have surveillance all over the school. I'll go back. Lastly, Butler urged the board to consider installing metal detectors and security cameras in the main entrance and clock tower entrance of Danville High School. We know for a fact kids are bringing guns into the school, Butler said. Dobbles refuted Butler's comments on Thursday, saying it was irresponsible to make those comments. If it's true, he should have reported it to the police. There is no evidence of guns in the schools, Dobbles said. We have not had any reports of any guns in any school this school year. Dobbles added, we have security cameras all over Danville High. We have surveillance all over the school. The board also heard a presentation from DHS Future Problem Solvers, who will present its Roots of Diversity project at the Future Problem Solvers International Competition, June 7 to 11 at the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse. Recognize the accelerated readers who reached 500 points. They are Angel Patrick and Zoe Wilson from North Ridge Middle School, Guan Tian, Tina Chen, Alexander Lovelace, and Zion Flowers, all from Southview Upper Elementary School, and Olivia Mullis, Addison Oldmiller, and Rylan Anderson, all of Northeast Elementary Magnet School. Approved a recommendation from the City of Danville to create a downtown TIF, that is Tax Increment Financing District. The district, which will be bordered by Seminary, Jackson, North, and Franklin Street, will be adjacent to the existing Midtown TIF district. The new TIF district will contain about 210 properties with a present assessed valuation of a little more than $4 million. By developing a new TIF district, city officials hope to spur investment in the area by providing incentives for those who invest and improve buildings in the district until 2040. Approved appointing Terry Atwood as district treasurer. Approved purchasing 168 new computers and accessories for DHS at a cost of $64,414 from IT Savvy of Indianapolis. Heard the results of the spring sanitation inspection reports. The district received a 99.2% overall, which is an A rating based on the Vermilion County Health Department grading scale. The schools with minor violations were DHS, which got a 99, hand washing sink leaked, Kenneth D. Bailey Academy, 99, floor under shelling requires more frequent cleaning, Edison Elementary, 97, ceiling tile missing in cafeteria and no covered trash receptacle in the girls' restroom, and Garfield Elementary, 96, chemical sanitizer for utensils not dispensing properly. The remaining schools received 100%. Approved the summer school program requests from Danville Housing Authority and the Danville Family YMCA. The amount the district charges for the meals covers all costs incurred by the district. Both programs will pick up the meals at Mark Denman Elementary School each day and deliver them to their respective sites. The district also loans the DHA, two milk coolers, a holding oven, and tables and chairs that they pick up in return. Approved the schedule for a summer breakfast and lunch program that is offered at no cost to anyone 18 and younger at the District 118 schools where summer school is being held. Children and teens do not have to be District 118 students, but must be 18 or younger. The schools serving breakfast and lunch next month are Mark Denman Elementary School from June 5th to the 30th, breakfast at 8:30 to 9 a.m. and lunch at 11:30 a.m. to noon. North Ridge Elementary School from June 5th to July 14th, breakfast at 8:30 to 9 and lunch at 11:30 to noon. And the Laurel Lee Fellowship from June 5th to the 30th, lunch only at 11:30 a.m. to noon. And now another article with the headline, Police Investigate Another Semi-Accident on Interstate, Dateline Oakwood. Illinois State Police continue to investigate another semi-tractor-trailer accident on Interstate 74 that had traffic backed up for hours Wednesday. According to ISP District 10, the accident occurred at 2:24 p.m. Wednesday about 0.25 miles east of milepost 204 on Interstate 74 near the Oakwood exit. The property damage crash involved a white Volvo truck tractor with a white box trailer driven by Ramiz Kurjajovic, 49, of Louisville, Kentucky, and a gray Freightliner truck tractor with a flatbed trailer driven by Keith Ray Stamper, 52, of Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Preliminary information from the ISP indicates Kurjajovic was traveling on I-74 eastbound as Stamper was traveling on I-74 westbound. Kurjajovic lost control, traveled through both eastbound lanes of traffic, and entered the median. The semi came to rest in the center median and partially into the westbound lanes of traffic. Stamper attempted to avoid striking Kurjajovic semi and began to skid toward the median. Tamper skid through the median and traveled westbound into the eastbound lanes. He came to final rest in the eastbound passing lane, according to police. At some point, the trailer being hauled by Kurjajovic struck the trailer being hauled by Stamper and caused the flatbed trailer to overturn. Both drivers were wearing seatbelts. According to police, Kurjajovic was cited for illegal lane usage. Whew. Sorry about those horrible pronunciation. I hope I got them close. The man's name was spelled Kurdejovic. And now a community brief from Danville with the headline, Shelter Seeks Volunteer. The Vermilion County Animal Shelter seeks volunteers to help care for its animals and other duties. Those interested can learn more by attending Change Your Life and the Lives of Our Furry Friends at 10:50 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. Wednesday in the second floor conference room at Danville Public Library, 319 North Vermilion Street. Paige Brown, Director of Vermilion County Department of Animal Control, will provide information. And another short one, with a dateline of Danville, Lions GLCC team up. Georgetown Lions and Georgetown Ladies Community Club will host a combined breakfast bake sale from 7 to 11 a.m. June 3rd at the Annex Building of the First Church of Christ. Lions serve pancakes, L&M sausage, biscuits and gravy, coffee, milk, and juice for donations to provide vision and hearing assistance locally and humanitarian health programs globally. GLCC's sale of homemade baked items donated by members aid the club's charitable and civic efforts. And now a column with the headline, Focus on Victims Rewards Terrorists. Familiar rituals followed the terrorist bombing at the arena in Manchester, England. Flowers piled up near the site of carnage. Reporters plumbed every line of the attacker's profile Speculating on what may have inspired his vile act, rallies called for solidarity and a rejection of hate. And the media drenched the public with tearful accounts of the pain exacted, often with musical accompaniment. The cable channels ran the few seconds of panicked crowds fleeing the arena in a hypnotic loop. And there were the agonizing stories of the victims and the grieving loved ones they left behind. This is the problem for those who want to cut off the terrorist crack system of rewards. To normal people, seeing the terrible aftermath should somehow punish the terrorists. Look at what you've done. But the terrorist responds, look at what horrible things I can do. The more outraged the public, the greater the payoff. There is no easy way to ratchet down the response. Blowback is sure to accompany any suggestion that the innocents and their suffering families should receive less attention. And for media competing for audience, wringing every bit of pathos out of a tragedy marked by evil and sympathetic victims is a sure draw. I'll be honest here. Though I regard the victim-centric coverage as counterproductive to fighting the scourge of terrorism, I too have difficulty turning away. But there can be limits to letting one's emotions get played for the benefit of terrorists. Those limits were reached in the hours after the bombing when, in a long phone conversation shared on air, CNN's Don Lemon milked the emotions of the distraught mother unable to find her daughter. This was a mother's nightmare brought to us raw and live. Lemon's words of comfort and request that anyone with information about the girl call CNN came off as not entirely wholesome. For sure, this was compelling television and radio, and we can understand the business reasons to keep it going. But it also fed terrorist thirst for power over the world's suffering bystanders. Surely the conversation could have been ended earlier. And though the video of terrified people scrambling out of the arena was part of the news, was it necessary to run it again and again, all night and into the next day? Unavoidable, but also unfortunate in such stories, is the intense focus on the targets of the attack. Young women and girls filled the audience at the Ariana Grande concert in Manchester. For a bomber intentionally aiming at this tender demographic, the especially horrified reaction would have spelled success. It's been impossible to ignore the angelic face of 8-year-old Sally Rose Russos, who died that night. But there must be a way to scale down the power of such images, thus ensuring they don't enhance the power of killers. Perhaps using them a bit less would help. Or putting a death in context of the thousands of other people who've perished through similar barbarism. No easy answers here. Whom the terrorists go after is obviously important information for confronting the threat, along with location and possible links to hideous ideologies. As these gruesome events pile up, the public is learning to go grimly about its business in the aftermath. The terrorists' ability to appall us diminishes as their assaults become sadly routine. But that only raises the stakes for them to lower the bar of decency, although whether through new means of attack or bigger numbers of dead. And as discussed here, targeting the vulnerable also enhances the shock value. A controlled response to such provocations reduces their rewards. Let our hearts be wrenched. But keep the face stoic. And now another column with the heading, we've seen this Clinton movie before and it still stinks. Back in 2000, I interviewed the late Reverend Jerry Falwell on camera in connection with a documentary film of Joe Connison's and my book, The Hunting of the President. It took place at Liberty University in Lynchburg, Virginia. We were surprised he agreed to talk with us, as an entire chapter of the book dealt with The Clinton Chronicles, a bizarre video Falwell promoted on a syndicated TV program, The Old Time Gospel Hour. A near-delusional concatenation of preposterous falsehoods and conspiracy theories, the video presented the then-president and his wife as an embezzler, drug smuggler, and serial killer. Supposedly, Bill Clinton routinely had his political rivals murdered, which in a small state like Arkansas, you'd think local reporters might have noticed. Also, needless to say, the fool thing sold like gangbusters. It was reportedly shown in evangelical churches. As H.L. Mencken used to say, nobody ever went broke, underestimating the intelligence of the American public. Alas, to many voters, the real-world give-and-take of Democratic politics isn't exciting enough. They require end-times melodrama, salvation versus damnation, good versus evil. Your candidate's a savior, his opponent's satanic. Anyway, when Falwell brought his roadshow to Arkansas, the pastor of Little Rock's largest Baptist church denied him its pulpit. He explained that by promoting a scurrilous video filled with falsehoods about the Clintons and many other Arkansans, the portly televangelist had violated the Ninth Commandment against bearing false witness. So I asked Falwell on camera if the Ninth Commandment was more or less important, theologically speaking, than the Sixth Commandment forbidding adultery. Somewhat to his credit, he acknowledged that they were the same. Falwell added that he had no idea how many of the video's crackpot claims were true, but that the American people deserved to hear them. At $40 a pop, including $3 for shipping and handling. And with that, the interview ended. Reverend Falwell suddenly had somewhere else he needed to be. Ancient history, I know. Pre-Fox News, pre-Breitbart, pre-internet, even. I mean, VHS videotapes. Who even remembers what those were? Falwell died in 2007, though his son, Jerry Falwell Jr., recently awarded an honorary doctorate from Liberty University to that exemplary Christian, President Donald J. Trump. But one thing that hasn't changed over the ensuing decades is the seeming need of a substantial proportion of the American electorate to believe that Democrats named Clinton are satanic killers. Hence the reappearance, after all these years, of yet another make-believe murder tale, this one championed by Fox News, Breitbart, and online conspiracy sites, with a substantial boost from WikiLeaks and Russian state news media. Oh, and Newt Gingrich, because it wouldn't be a serious hoax without Newt. Also because, believe it or not, defending the honor of wrongly accused Kremlin intelligence agencies appears to be the whole point. The Washington Post's Dave Weigel documented Newt's recent appearance on Fox and Friends, where the former speaker breathlessly announced that it wasn't the Russians that leaked thousands of embarrassing Democratic National Committee emails to WikiLeaks. No, it was supposedly a young DNC staffer named Seth Rich who was shot to death on a Washington street at 4 a.m. in what D.C. police think was a botched robbery attempt last July. Russian quote-unquote fake news operatives went right to work, charging that a top American Democratic Party staffer preparing to testify against Hillary Clinton was assassinated this past Sunday. During a secret meeting in Washington, D.C., he believed he was having with the Federal Bureau of Investigation FBI agents, but who turned out instead to be a quote-unquote hit team, and who in turn were captured yesterday after a running gun battle with U.S. federal police forces just blocks from the White House. Got that? A team of professional assassins hired by Hillary Clinton got into a firefight with federal agents and were taken down just outside the White House, and you never heard about it. Total media blackout. Whoever wrote that has seen far too many spy thrillers where epic car chases and gun battles take place in picturesque parts of major cities all the time. Of course, Jason Bourne rarely sticks around to read the newspapers. But if you're the kind of person who believes that such things are possible, well, either you're a gullible hayseed who also believes that Hillary Clinton ran a child molesting ring at a Washington pizza joint while simultaneously conducting a presidential campaign, or else you're a Kremlin imagineer whose only knowledge of American life derives from Clint Eastwood movies. For the record, apart from Seth Rich's tragic death, there's zero evidence for a single alleged quote-unquote fact supporting this absurd fable. No leaked emails, no pending testimony, no hit team, no nothing. It's sheer make-believe. The victims' bereaved parents have repeatedly begged these cruel hoaxers to stop besmirching their son's memory, but that's now not how they roll, not the Fox News apparatchiks. This has been the Vermilion County News for Friday, May 26, 2017. I look forward to reading with you next time.